Have you been feeling the heat this summer? Well, maybe it's time to rethink how you cool your house. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger is back. He's a registered home inspector who specializes in the design of air barrier systems that reduce energy consumption. He is with us every couple of months to talk about home projects and repair. We're going to talk about the different ways you can cool your house and, of course, take your questions. Join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Excellent. I'm sorry not to be in the studio with you, but hopefully...
Yes.
My voice is loud and clear here via phone.
You sound great. You sound great. And
excellent.
I'm sure we're going to get lots of phone calls today. But first, let's talk about cooling our homes. You know, most people think about cooling your home and they jump right to central air. But, you know, that's certainly not the only option. So let's start with some very, you know, basic ways to keep the house cooler. And those that are relatively inexpensive, what would those be?
Well, we want to think about cooling, and cooling has become more and more important as climate change has begun to really affect Wisconsin. We now have parts of the American West where we have seen a 2 degree Celsius increase in the mean temperature. Wisconsin isn't that bad yet, but it's sort of like some of us were thinking, you know, maybe we'll retire, we'll move to Georgia. Well, instead, Georgia is moving to Wisconsin. We are becoming warmer, and we're also becoming wetter. And so when I like to think about managing heat, I want to think about managing humidity as well. You know the old saying, it's not the heat, it's the humidity.
So true.
Well, so we need to think about them all at the same time. And sometimes it pays to do something to our house right away. It pays to do something to our house right away if we can get a good payback. So if we do something that reduces our utility bills by, you know, $500 a year, well, it's probably worth spending several thousand dollars to do that.
Sure.
Other times it's like, well, let's do this when we do the maintenance. Okay, we're going to put on a new roof in 4 years. Right now we have black shingles. Black shingles absorb a huge amount of sunlight. So in 4 years, when we put on a new roof, we're going to go with a gray or a white or something that has an albedo effect where we are going to reflect more of that light back into the atmosphere and absorb less of it into our attic. So we need to look at the things that make sense to do immediately. And then I tell every homeowner, when I do a home inspection for them, have a 5-year plan. Be looking ahead. If we are going to change the windows in our house in 3, 4, 5 years because they're getting so old and shabby, well, let's not just go out and buy windows. Let's buy windows with the right glass, especially on the south side, so that we've got good heat mirror in them. So planning ahead is where we need to start when we're doing anything, and then figuring out the cost and the benefit. One of the things that we seem to get the best cost benefit for is insulation and attic venting. Because not only are we removing summer heat, where we are working on eliminating ice damming in the winter, we may be reducing our winter utility bills. So if we start in the attic and look at the air sealing, the insulation, and the venting system, those are the first three things on my list of 12 things to do to manage heat in your house.
Okay. A quick question now. You were talking about the color of your shingles on your roof. So when, I think a lot of people up here in the north tend to use black because of cold winter temperatures. So when do you decide, is it more important for cooling or is it more important for heating? Or doesn't it matter in the winter with those dark shingles?
The dark shingles do matter in the winter negatively.
Because
what's our one big problem? When the phone rings off the hook in January, it's because we've had 20 inches of snow, everybody's got ice dam, and they have water dripping down out of their light fixtures inside their house.
Nightmare.
Why would we want to heat our attic in the winter? because it's going to melt the snow on the roof. So the south side of our roof, the snow is not there. We've got black shingles. The temperature in the attic goes up to 50 degrees because it's black shingles. The north side of the roof, all the snow melts, runs down, backs up in the gutter, and drips into the kitchen. Ugh. So year round, we really want to think about albedo effect because we always want our attics to be cool. The cooler the attic, the cooler the house in the summer.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense to me. But what about some of the small things like, you know, fans, ceiling fans? Is that something that someone can add in relatively inexpensively that might help?
Yes and no. Generally, when I do a home inspection or look at a house that has issues with heating and I see ceiling fans, I know something isn't working. So a ceiling fan is sort of like a Band-Aid. We know something is not right. And so what we're doing with the ceiling fans is we are trying to circulate the air. Now, one thing that we find in a lot of houses is that if the house is built before, let's say, 1960, 1965, maybe it only has low returns for the central air system, assuming it has a central furnace. I mean, obviously, a house with a boiler isn't going to have air returns. But you may have your 1964 ranch house. All of the returns are down at the floor. So what we're doing with the air conditioning that we're paying a lot of money for is we're pumping the cold air in at the floor, and then we're pulling the cold air off the floor. And so our feet are 65 degrees and our foreheads are 85 degrees. So we put in a ceiling fan to mix it up. So these ceiling fans cost a couple $100 a piece, plus the fixture in the ceiling is not a fan support fixture, so we need to really rewire that. So let's think instead, if the returns are on the inside walls of the house, as they are in newer houses, we can add high returns at very low cost. I would say we can do an entire house for $200. The difference that that can make on your air conditioning can easily be 20%. Because what we're going to do then is in the summer, we're going to pull the hot air off the ceiling, send that down to the cooling coil in the furnace, and in the winter, we're going to open up the low register and we're going to take the cold air off the floor. So the revision of venting is probably the cheapest single thing that we can do, assuming we have vents on the inside wall. Now, Jill, way back when we first got central heat, the furnace fan hadn't been invented. So we had what was called gravity heat, these giant old furnaces in the basement wrapped in asbestos.
Sure.
And what happened is heat rose. So basically heat fell down through big returns into the furnace, and it rose up very slowly through big ducts. And so what they did is they put all the supplies in the center of the house because that was the shortest distance, at least dragging the ducts. Once we had the good furnace fans, by the 1960s, by the mid-60s at least, we started putting our air supplies where it was coldest in the winter, which is the outside walls, and the returns on the inside. So some houses, unfortunately, only have returns on outside walls, and there you don't want to be cutting a high return in. So on some houses, you may have to take a look and say, well, I've got outside returns. They're all low. Upstairs is stifling, even though downstairs may be cool. What do I do? Well, there we have to look at a way of accessing some space where we can get a high return in. What I find in a lot of old houses is that we have chimneys that are redundant. They don't have a fireplace. They had a furnace, they had a water heater. We go to side vented water heater, side vented furnace, and suddenly we have a chimney that really has no purpose. If we take it down, we suddenly have a 2-foot by 2-foot hole in our house. This is great for 2 and 3 story houses and even 1 story houses, because if we take out that chimney, we can put in new supply and return ducts, including the high returns, to make our air conditioning work more efficiently.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. So do the fireplaces, the chimneys have to be removed first before this can all happen, right?
That's right. And of course, if we've got a wood-burning fireplace in our house,
not a good idea.
We can't do it. But we've had houses where it has 2 or 3 flues, one of which is for the fireplace we want to keep. But one of the flues, the one that used to feed the furnace and the water heater, isn't used anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a good HVAC person can actually seal the flue at the top and then line it with a stainless steel liner and use that chimney flue as a return duct.
Okay.
And, of course, the chimney usually comes down right next to the furnace, so it gives you a nice, strong return duct.
Mm-hmm. So what about houses that have a boiler system? I'm asking for someone I know like me. how do you do like an air conditioning? Can you use those chimneys?
Well, no. Okay. If you have a boiler system, there are three ways of doing it. The most expensive way is traditional air conditioning, which means we're putting a complete new duct system with the old big ducts. At that point, you may as well get rid of the boiler and just put it in a furnace.
Sure.
And that's really expensive. Most people don't do it. On a lot of older houses, we can take a look at what are called high velocity air conditioning systems. So let's say we have a two-story house with a decent attic. We build a room in the attic that is insulated, and we put a cooling coil and air handler in the attic with ducts that go to the second floor, and we sneak a couple of ducts down to the first floor. We insulate those ducts well in the attic. And so what we have is we have a system with mini ducts, because the high-velocity system gets rid of the big ducts by having more air pressure. So, you know, you think about a garden hose. Low air, low pressure in a garden hose, you need a really big hose to get 5 gallons per minute out of it.
Mm-hmm.
High pressure hose, you get a lot out of a small hose. So that's the second way of doing it. The third way of doing it is the mini splits, the Mitsubishis. They all seem to be Japanese companies at this point. I'm sure there's an American one, but the Mitsubishis are the ones we see the most, which is a single compressor outside and 1, 2, 3, 4, and sometimes even 5 what are called mini split air handlers. So your master bedroom is stifling, as is your family room. So you've got your compressor outside. You have to run line sets up to your master bedroom and to your family room. And then you will have this white cooling coil and blower fan basically in that room. It looks a little bit like a hotel unit, unfortunately, and not exactly the prettiest things in the world. But let's say you got a mid-century modern house. And it's got those little cupboards above the closet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you put a nice wood louver in there and hide the mini split in there, and it looks like the architect designed it to be that way. So you can get smart with them. We've hidden them in walls. We've hidden them in floors. We've done all kinds of things to make them not quite as motel looking as they usually are. So traditional air conditioning, high velocity air conditioning, and mini splits all work to get the heat out of your house.
Okay. Great. We did get an email from Levi, and he wants to know, what are the pros and cons of geothermal heating cooling system? Is it worth the cost?
I can give you a definite maybe on that.
Thank you so much for that advice.
Well, it's cost benefit. Typically what happens is the larger the project, the better the return on investment. Where we have put them in, generally, it has been for fairly large houses in Madison, so above 1,800 square feet. It also can depend upon the geology, the type of soil. Can you put in what's called a slinky system, which is basically you dig a big wide ditch and you put in what looks like a giant slinky of tubing. We designed one in the Wisconsin River Valley where we put a slinky into wet sand. It was just fabulous. The ground was wet. The heat transfer was great. We put one in here in Madison and University Heights, 4 very deep, expensive wells. But considering the size of the house, it still worked. What's great is you are getting your water coming through your system. You're stepping it up in the winter to get and then removing the heat from it. And in the summer, you're running it through the cooling coil. So if you can afford it, it's great. Now, there used to be quite a few tax credits. I think that most of those tax credits, unfortunately, have expired. So it is something worth looking at. But as far as the return on investment, it may not be there.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for that email. And don't forget, you can give us a call if you have a question, 1-800-642-1234. It doesn't have to be about heating and cooling. It can be about just about anything. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Nigel O'Shea is our technical director today, and Jane Rotunda is our on-air producer. We are talking about home improvement with John Freiberger today. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send us an email. And that address is ideas@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Justin, John. He said that they have a 1920s duplex with little or no insulation. What type of insulation should they look for to help reduce noise between the two units? It's an upper lower duplex. They would likely add from the outside of the house. What do you think?
But the noise is through the floors inside?
Must be.
Okay, so it sounds like we almost have two questions, thermal insulation and noise abatement.
Okay.
So let's talk about heat loss, heat gain first. So what the first three things on my list of 12 is making sure that the attic is well vented so that we get rid of both the summer heat and the winter heat. So we aren't picking up heat gain from the ceiling in the summer and we're not ice damming in the winter. Number two on the list is adding insulation. We really want to be up to R50 or R60 effective insulation. And number three, which sometimes I think is the most important, even though it's number three, is air sealing. So we've got a 1920 duplex. I can guarantee that 30 to 40% of the heat loss in that duplex is going into the attic from the second floor of the duplex, and heat's going from the first floor into the second floor. So the first floor is going to have a higher heating bill than the second floor if they are on separate furnaces. If not, they're going to have the ducts open more on the second floor. So in many cases, what we find with these very older houses is we actually want to remove everything that is in the attic, and then we want to completely air seal it. Now, some people will do that with little cans of great stuff. They'll try to find all the openings and seal it. I don't. I just bring in a contractor, and I spray 2 inches of high-density urethane, two-part spray, over the entire, well, it would be above the plaster or the drywall of the second floor, so I'm sealing it. Now, that gives me about anywhere from R11 to R14 insulation value. And then I add high-density cellulose above that. What is interesting on air sealing is that we are finding that you get about a 20% bonus. So in other words, if you air seal your attic and then put in R40 cellulose, it performs like R48 cellulose. So you don't have to put in as much insulation if you have air sealing because you stop so much of the heat loss that is due to air movement. So that's where I would start. And we find 99.9%. The biggest bang for the buck on reducing heat loss and our utility bills is to do the attic. If you air seal the attic, think about taking a giant styrofoam cooler and putting it over the top of your house, because that's what it's doing. It's stopping the airflow, it's stopping humidity transfer, and it is stopping the thermal radiant loss.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. Oh, you had more? Go ahead.
Well, now the noise.
The noise, that's right.
Justin is asking about noise, and boy, that is difficult. What happens with noise is it transfers through the framing. So if somebody is tap dancing upstairs, it's coming right through the framing.
Sure.
Now, what we do in modern buildings is we put in sound mats. And if we're building multi-story buildings, we will use very, very solid, massive floors like spancrete. Or if we have a wooden floor, we will pour something like gypcrete over the top of it because mass is what attenuates sound. Secondly, it's separation. So the noise question, I really can't give a good answer. Whatever it is probably going to be difficult. I think finding quiet tenants is probably the is probably the easiest route.
Be a question on the application. Do you tap dance?
Do you tap dance?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that email, Justin. Let's go to the phones now. We're all full. We've got John in Cuba City with us. Hi, John.
Yes.
What's your question for John?
I have a question about spray foam insulation for an attic and creating a hot roof.
Yes.
My question, I have a Cape Cod home, and it's one of those with the two side attics around our upstairs bedrooms, and it's been notorious for being too hot up there in the summer and too cold in there in the winter. And
correct.
I've had a couple of insulation contractors in that all seem to be recommending spray foaming and really sealing up everything, the soffits and the vents, and creating a hot roof in there. And mm-hmm. it makes me leery. I just kind of wonder what your thoughts are on that and your experience.
Yeah, you're wise to be leery, John. John, how old are your existing shingles?
I would guess probably 15 years now.
And are they a 3-in-1 tab, or are they a laminated architectural grade?
They are the 3-in-1.
Okay, that's good news. You don't have shingles that are going to last a whole many years longer. So here's, and one other question, John. You've got the slope yeah. ceilings on the second floor, right? And those are just 2x4s?
Correct, yes.
Correct. Okay, so no matter what we do there, even if we put in 3.5 inches of insulation, we're still going to have a little bit of a weak spot there, unless we want to try to put it, you know, take down the drywall or plaster on the inside and put on an inch of foam. But it's not the end of the world. I think that they are correct as to how to approach this, because Cape Cods are so complicated. You know, trying to do part of the first floor ceiling, then the knee walls, and then getting into the slope ceiling, then doing the attic. It's just really, really difficult. So we're going to end up with a hot roof. Hot roof means that your warranty on your shingles is no good, especially if you've got darker shingles with southern exposure. They aren't going to last as long, but they're already 15 years old. So I think what I would suggest you do is go ahead and get this work done, and let's reduce this heat loss and make it more comfortable. Then when you put on a new roof, tear off the shingles, put down a layer of roofing underlayment. It used to be felt, now there's a lot more things. Then go ahead and put the 1x2 strips over the top of the rafters, and then put it on a second layer of sheathing. That is going to give you a 3/4 inch airspace underneath the new sheathing. You will no longer then have a hot roof. Plus, you are going to get airflow through there. So as those shingles start picking up heat in the midday sun, it is going to warm the air in those cavities. It's going to come popping out of the roof vents, and it's going to be coming in down. You're going to end up with fascia vents down in the bottom. So this is the system that can really work. Now, if you do have a Cape Cod with no dormers, with really something that's really quite simple, you can also take a look at rooftop panels, at rooftop energy panels, which can be purchased in a vented form. So I think you are on the right track, but I think long term we don't want a hot roof, because the next time you put on shingles in 5 years or so, you may as well go with a lifetime roof, so you never have to worry about roofing this house again. And to get that lifetime warranty, we're going to need to have a vented roof. Make sense?
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call, John. Let's go on to Richard in Milwaukee. Hi, Richard. What can we help you with? Richard, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. Hi. I've got a Cape Cod with a gable of the house toward the east side, and a half of the front of the house is a porch, 12 feet wide, 5 feet deep, and it has a 3-foot high triple track storm windows in it, and it had a water leakage problem, I think is due to the triple tracks, and so there was rotted framing. I've replaced that, and for the sake of curb appeal, I want to improve I want different window arrangement. I want a central window tall, and side windows, and just basically improve the appearance. And what I've drawn up probably adds 40 square feet to the window area. Right now there's probably 5 lineal feet by 10 feet by 5 feet of glass by 3 feet high, so that's 60 square feet. And I'd add, probably 5 by 5, about 30 square feet of glass. So I want to like to know what I can use for glass that would minimize solar gain and still get me the curb appeal.
Sure. Well, if you go to any window company, glass company, they are going to have a solar gain coefficient. And with a plain old El Cheapo double pane, no coatings, your solar gain is going to be about 0.76. So pretty high solar gain. The best you're going to do is going to be a triple pane with a double sunstop and argon coating. That is going to cut it by more than half to 0.338. So what you're going to need to do is to talk to whoever is going to supply your windows and tell them that you want a glass. And it's sort of funny because there's the glass that's at 7.668, 6.85, 6.15, 6.23, and then it plummets. And you really want something that is under 0.4 as far as solar heat gain if you're going to have these large windows facing the south. And you're probably going to end up with a triple pane unless you use, you are going to end up with a triple pane other than a glass that's called C270/I89. You probably didn't get that, but just talk to the, basically what it is, it's dual pane. It has a one low E coating and it has one stops, sunstop coating and then argon gas. Okay. So it's just a double pane, not a triple pane. So it won't be quite as expensive. So one low E coating, one sunstop coating, but argon gas inside. That is going to get you down to 0.361, which is really good. Your transmittable light will be a little dimmer. A plain old window is about 81% transmittable light. When you get down to the dual pane, you'll be about 69%, but I doubt very much whether you're going to notice any difference. So talk to a window store. Don't go to a big box. This is not a Home Depot thing. Talk to a local Pella person, a Marvin person, an Anderson person, somebody who doesn't do anything but sell windows, and tell them that you want something that is going to have a solar heat gain of under 0.4, and they should be able to come up with something for you.
Okay. Well, thank you for that call, Richard. Appreciate that. Let's go on to Kay in Eagle River. Hi, Kay. Kay, are you there?
Kay.
Just keep going. Keep talking.
Okay. I'm in a bad spot right now.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. So talk fast.
Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. Thank you for taking my call. I'll take my answer off the air. I have a townhouse-style duplex that has was built with electric heat in the late 70s. And I'm wondering what is the best route for me to go. I want to get a natural gas line put in from the road and see what I should do. Should I go like in-floor heating or should I do like the splits, have one upstairs, one downstairs? I'm wondering what the best, cost-efficient and heat-efficient way is to go, an air conditioning way to go.
All right. Jay, okay. John, do you have any questions before Kay goes?
No, it's okay. Well, too many questions. Like, would you please send me a complete house plan? I think what Kay's going to have to do, she's going to have to meet with three contractors up there, okay, which she's going to check out real carefully. She's going to check out Better Business Bureau, et cetera, and get referrals on three contractors that are smart about doing retrofits. And then we can take a look and see how we're going to get ducts into this duplex. Now, often when we're retrofitting a townhouse or a two-story house, what we're doing is we're putting a furnace and a cooling coil air handler in the basement. We're putting traditional ductwork in the basement. And then we're finding some way to get up to the attic. We're putting a chaise in a closet or something, or we're putting this big duct that goes up into the attic. And then out of that big duct, we're running individual ducts to the various rooms. And then we also need to put in a return up in the attic. So we have to make a hole in the house, sort of a 2-foot by 2-foot hole in the house. But sometimes you can do that with stacked closets. Sometimes you can get lucky. Sometimes it's very difficult. But that brings me to one of our other problems. So what Kay needs to do, she needs to talk to three contractors. One of them is going to have a better plan than the rest, and that's the one to hire. But these attic ducts are an issue. What code requires is they be slightly insulated. The attic ducts are usually flexible ducts, so they've got a lot of drag in them because they're not a solid surface. You know, they're sort of corrugated on the inside, and then they don't have much insulation. So if Kay is going to go the route where she's going to be putting ducts in her attic, I would like to get those ducts in metal, not the type you buy off the shelf that already has the insulation wrapped around them. And then once I have them put in, I want to spray foam them so they're absolutely airtight and they're very well insulated. Because one way we get a lot of summer heat in the house is ducts in the attic. The attic is 140 degrees, and basically we start pushing air down into the second floor through the ceiling ducts, and it's hot air. And then we turn the AC on, and it's cold for a while, but then it heats up again. So we're sort of going back and forth, and then in the winter we're losing heat through those same ducts. So if anyone has existing ducts in their attic now, take a look at them. If they are this lightly insulated, flexible stuff, you may want to think about retrofitting with solid ducts that are spray foam and very well insulated.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that call, Kay. We're talking with home improvement expert John Freiberger. Join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Alice. She's wondering, she said that they have vinyl siding and windows, and they were told they shouldn't caulk the windows because the siding has a J connection and the caulking would interfere with the movement of the siding. Is that correct?
That is indeed correct. Vinyl siding is what we call a rain screen. It is not a rain barrier. In fact, if you look at the bottom of your vinyl siding, you'll see little holes. Like every 2 foot, there's a little hole in it. That's to drain the water out. What we really rely upon with our houses, at least with a modern house, is a complete house wrap. Tyvek, Henry, one of the other house wraps. And those need to be sealed very carefully to the vinyl windows. Now, the vinyl window may or may not have a nailing flange. If it has a nailing flange, it's pretty easy. It was probably well taped and should be really quite airtight. If we have an old house where we've added vinyl siding, we probably went right over the original siding. And the felt under that siding is our weather-resistant barrier. But vinyl siding is never meant to be caulked. It's all meant to be drainable. And all the water is supposed to either drain out of the end or out of the drain hole. So the advice that Alice was given is correct. No caulk.
Okay, great. Thanks for that email, Alice. Let's go back to the phones. Sam in Osseo has a question. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
What can we help you with?
Oh, somebody already talked to me, but...
Well, you're on the air now, Sam. You're on the air, so go ahead.
I did not know that.
I know, you're expecting Larry. Larry's not here today. It's me.
So I've been wanting to ask... John, this question for years, but I've since moved on from the house and was planning on rebuilding, but now I'm rethinking. So I have a pretty grand old farmhouse built, from what I understand, around 1912. It's about a 28 by 38 house and very tall. It is built on a swamp with a half basement, so I've got a foot and a half of water in. So I'm considering moving the house about 200 feet up on top of a knoll. So I'm looking for advice on moving an old farmhouse. And obviously, since it'd be moved, I'd be committed to it. And wondering on when an old farmhouse could be remodeled and when what to look for, if it will just be a money pit.
Well, of course it'll be a money pit.
Yep.
but let's first things first. Moving a house is really not that difficult. In my younger days, I moved all kinds of things, including a 72-ton three-width brick mansion.
Oh my!
Which we moved across a cornfield, over a stream, and across another cornfield.
Oh, my gosh.
Picking up part of the foundation with it. It's the John and Mary Smith National Historic Site Homestead in Sun Prairie. We actually moved because it was going to be demolished for the expansion of Highway 151 many years ago. And it really wasn't very onerous to move it. Many years ago, I moved a house down the West Beltline at night.
Wow.
So houses, old frame houses, are fairly light. And there's quite a few companies in Wisconsin that specialize in moving houses. So basically, if you have a house that has almost no value, the cost of moving and putting in a new foundation may make the money pit a fairly accessible money pit. You'll want to talk to your mover and make sure that this thing is structurally stable. Now, the masonry house that we moved, we actually wrapped in steel cables. We basically we girdled the thing with compressed steel cables to make sure that it wouldn't move. But the home movers know all of this stuff, so I would consult with a couple of them. Be sure to get referrals. There's a couple of home movers in Wisconsin. They are an interesting group of people. So do some research as to whom you're working with, their references. Will they actually get it done when they say they're going to get it done, which is one of the big issues. But houses get moved in Wisconsin all the time. I have a friend, I think, has moved three of them. People keep giving him houses, and he keeps picking them up and moving them. So it may work, Sam. But, Sam, come up with a plan. How are you going to insulate this when you're done with it? What structural repairs are you going to have to make? What's the condition of the windows? Are the walls, the siding, are they structurally good? If you're going to put in a whole new foundation, why not make that a waterproof, damp-proof, insulated foundation so that we've got nice livable space below grade? Or perhaps this farmhouse is going to look good if it sits 3 or 4 feet out of the soil, so that what is usually the basement is almost a walkout. So do a lot of planning, do some interviewing, have knowledgeable people take a look at the house. And, you know, it's sort of green architecture, really, to save these things. And if you've got a half foot of water in the basement and it's in a swamp, it sounds like perhaps rescuing it would be an environmentally good thing to do.
Okay, well, Sam, thank you very much for that question, and maybe you can do a reality show because that sounds pretty interesting. Let's go on to Kathy in East Troy. Hi, Kathy. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. What's your question?
We had a remodeling of our bathroom, and we had a shower stall put in where a closet was and a new tub put in. And we had two doors to enter, and one of the doorways we put in a cabinet. Now, since it was finished, we've had this like sewer smell in the bathroom, and we haven't been able to resolve where it's coming from. We've had the plumber come in and do a smoke test. We had the plumber come in and block off all the piping to that part of the house. And we haven't had any resolution with the plumbing where it's coming from. Yesterday we had the HVAC in to check to see if it was an animal in the system that had died, and they had a camera go in and found nothing. And I also had the gas company come in, and they found a small leak that was by our fireplace key, and they shut that off. But my husband said he still smelled it yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, so a sewer smell, you know, the question is whether the sewer smell is actually sewer smell or is it something else. And, Kathy, how long ago was this new bath put in?
It was finished, like, around May 1st this year, May 2nd.
This year, okay. Okay,
of this year,
that helps us eliminate a whole bunch of things like water issues and, you know, due to some odd thing in condensation rotting walls. So we don't have to worry about that. Well, the plumber, I'm sure, was able to block the drains. The question is, do we have a separated vent pipe in a wall so that we've had something part and the vent, instead of going all the way up through the attic and out through the roof, is actually venting into the wall? That would probably be the first thing to check. You should be able to do that with a mini sewer cam, basically starting on the roof and following it down. So I would take a look at that, because if there is something in the wall that is parted, so we're getting sewer gas in the wall, that might account for it.
Okay. Well, good luck, Kathy. That's got to be so annoying. It sounds like she's done a lot to check it out, but yeah, very frustrating. We're talking with home improvement expert John Freiberger. What questions do you have for him? Our lines are all filled right now, but write down the number, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Hope you can join us tomorrow when prairie gardening expert Neil DeBall joins us to talk about getting your native garden ready for fall. That's at 11 on Friday, 6 a.m. on Saturday, or, of course, online anytime. John, before we went to the break, we were talking about, we had a caller with smell in her bathroom, and Jeff has a response to that. Jeff in Rhinelander. Hi. Jeff, are you there?
Yes.
Yes. What was your comment about that smell?
We had the same issue up here, and I had a septic line and everything. I went through everything. It turned out it was the wax ring under the toilet was bad. So once I replaced that, that sealed up all the smell.
Oh, goodness. What a simple solution that would be. Well, Kay, if you're still listening, I hope you can try that, too. What do you think, John? Is that a good thought?
That should possibly help. A toilet does have a trap. And so the question is exactly the type of toilet, what you would get out of the wax ring. But it certainly is possible. Generally, if a wax ring is not sealed correctly, we know about it because we've got a leak. So it's pretty easy to check in the basement below it or the room below it, but it's certainly something that the plumber can easily check.
Okay. And we had an email from Dick in Chippewa Falls. He said that they're replacing 40-year-old windows, and the contractor suggested using new construction windows rather than replacement windows because he said the end result would be more energy efficient. Dick wants to know what's the difference and what are the pros and cons of either.
Yeah, well, that's a very complicated question, similar to Richard's. The big question with windows is generally the National Fenestration Council, we have standards for windows, and almost all windows, except for the real El Cheapos that come off the back of somebody's truck, meet the national and the Wisconsin standards for energy efficiency. The big problem we find with windows is leaks around, not through the window, but around the edges of the windows. And especially where we have replacement windows where we keep the existing jams and sills and things and basically slide these in, and there's no nailing plans to seal to, and we're just sealing with foam. We've had jobs where we've come in, looked at the windows, and called the contractor back and said, now take them all out, and let's try this again. So if you can indeed remove everything and put in windows, 40-year-old house, so that's going to have been constructed in the 80s. So hopefully we have either exterior foam or a house wrap or something to seal to. That probably is sage advice from Dick's window person. And, of course, we're still pretty cold in the winters up in Chippewa Falls. So that may indeed be good advice. But the difference between cheap windows and good windows is absolutely astonishing. I mean, the differences in heat loss is around 400%.
It's amazing.
So it really pays. It pays to buy some quality.
Okay, good to hear. Let's go now to Mike in Milton. Hi, Mike. What can we help you with?
Yeah, Mike, had a question. Redoing my paver patio in the back and going to pour concrete. Right now, it's a pretty big step out that back door. More than, it's about 10 inches, and I'd like to raise that concrete level up when I have it poured. But it's going to be there'll be less than 6 inches of space between the top surface of the concrete and the top of the foundation wall, the rim joist. It's got great flowage away from it. It kind of goes downhill. I'm not really worried about any water. I just wondered if that is a code or other reasons not to put it that close up. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, that's a good question, because it's just astonishing how many houses we see where basically the siding is in the mulch and we're getting water coming in and causing issues. But if we have 6 inches of foundation still showing there, that really should keep you in good shape. You really should not have any issues. Make sure that we're going to have a mass of concrete there, right? So we're going to have a bunch of weight. What sort of foundation do you have?
It's porcelain.
On your house?
Yep,
okay,
porcelain.
Good. You've got a fairly strong foundation. Do have a little bit of crush space between the foundation and the house, three quarters of an inch at least, something where, you know, they can put in, you know, like foam strips, and then you can seal that joint if you want with a self-leveling urethane caulk, etc. Make sure that your sub base is very well drained. I wouldn't put down gravel. I'd probably put down something like pea gravel rather than gravel with fines, 3/4 inch with fines. And that really should put you in good shape. You're asking all the right questions there.
Okay, thanks for that question, Mike. Let's go on to Peggy in Orfordville. Hi, Peggy.
Really should put you. In,
Peggy,
in,
are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, you need to turn that radio down.
I just turned it off. I have window questions and siding questions. I have a historic house, and it's a pain in my butt. But maybe I should go online, but I could ask the one question about the roof treatment thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mentioned that there's a company that treats old shingles with essential oils to give it a boost.
Okay, Peggy, you are on the air right now.
Oh, I am. Excuse me. Yeah, I have an old house, 1835. It's very historic. An architect from Norway built it, and he was renowned. So I'm trying to help that house, and it's 3/4 of stone and 1/4 of siding. The siding is falling off. It is cedar, and under the siding is log cabin. I got some nice windows 11 years ago, and they failed, I think, because of the way they were installed in the cement window frames. But they're all, you can't even see through them. The glass is so bad. But my question is immediately trying to add some life to my roof so I can stretch my finances out. There's a company that sprays essential oils on the roof for a treatment that makes these shingles more flexible and adds some life to that roof.
Okay, thanks,
Peggy.
What type
of shingles do we have, Peggy?
The shingles now are 21 years old. They're pretty good, and they're not really in too bad of shape, except that the nails are coming up, so the water can kind of get in there now a little bit.
What kind of shingles are they, though, Peggy?
Oh, I think they're, I'm not the expert. I couldn't tell you exactly, but I had a roofing company look at them last week, and he said that they weren't too bad, but he didn't tell me what they were.
But are they wood or are they asphalt?
Oh, this is not the original shingle. They're asphalt.
Okay, thank
They're
you.
They're asphalt shingle. Okay, yeah. I do not know of anything that works on wood shingles. That doesn't mean that such a thing doesn't exist, but I don't know of anything that it pays to spray on a wood shingle roof. Long term, because you can get the tax credits, you may want to think about going back to the original wood shingled roof. A wood shingled roof properly maintained will last 25, 30 or more years. And there are products that we can use on wood shingled roofs. And in response to a call about a year and a half ago, a gentleman asked me if there was anything, and I said, I don't know, I'll find out. I've now tested it for a year, and I can tell you that Green Off from Advanced Chemicals actually works on wood shingled roofs. So I don't think I'd bother to spend any money at this point, but do some long-term planning. And remember that if this is on the state register, you will be able to get some tax credits. I'm assuming you know that. And if you don't, you need to go to wisconsinhistory.org, click on the green button with information for owners of historic homes, and then read all of the material. And that goes for any of our listeners, Jill, who have a home that may be a little bit interesting or is within a historic district. for heating, ventilating, electrical, roofs, windows, all of those things, the state does offer a 25% tax credit if your house is eligible for the state register.
Okay, great advice. Good luck, Peggy. I think I'm going to go hit that tab myself. I just bought an older house, so I should take a look at that. Could always use a break, for sure. We've got about 2 minutes or so, John. We didn't get to cover all of your list of information about cooling. Where can people find that?
Oh, I haven't typed it up yet.
Usually
I do, and I send it to Larry. But tell you what, I will get something typed up here.
Okay.
And I basically have a list at this point, but I will get something typed up and get it onto the website at educatedhomeowner.net.
That's right. And there's a link on our website. So you just have to go to WPR.org/Larry and you'll see the program note for today. And there'll be a link on there that'll take you directly to it. So what are you thinking? Maybe next couple days, John? Or?
Oh, it's probably going to be next week.
Next week. Okay.
Things have been.
Yeah, busy time for everybody. Okay, well, we've been talking about home improvement with John Freiberger, and we're going to be back with more, but we're going to take this look at the news. If you have a question or email, or a question, please email at ideas@wpr.org, or you can call 800-642-1234. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about home improvement with regular guest John Freiberger. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in the evaluation of older structures, kind of the other two. His firm, Freiberger & Associates, consults in the restoration and adaptive reuse of older homes. Well, John, we've got lots of emails. We got lots of calls per usual. Let's go to an email from Mary in Cedarburg. She wants to know, can aluminum siding be the cause of afternoon heating inside their house on a bright, sunny summer day? They keep the sun out of the house, but on warm, sunny days when the sun beats on the west side of the house, it gets very hot and stuffy. The house is a small two-story. The second story is a small open loft. What do you think?
Well, it is entirely possible. We talked about albedo effect and heat gain by dark shingles. And siding is the same thing. I don't know what color Mary's siding is, but if she's got a dark brown or dark gray siding or something like that that reflects very little heat, it is entirely possible that siding is getting quite warm. Now, if she has an older two-story house in Cedarburg, it's possible that some of that heat is working its way through the walls. It'd be interesting to talk to a local home inspector in Cedarburg. There's a couple of good ones there, but one that has a thermal camera. And ask him to come over some bright, sunny afternoon, and then let's take readings on the interior walls of the house. If we find that west wall of the house is 83 degrees and the north wall is 72 and the south is 74, we're going to know that it actually is being pushed through that wall, because we'll be able to tell with the infrared camera how much heat is coming in. And if that is a question, the nice thing about metal siding is it can be painted. So Mary may wish to think about redecorating in a slightly lighter color.
Okay, great. And one more from Sean in Lyndhurst, Illinois. Apparently they will be selling their house in about a year. Is the attic insulation something that is important for a home inspection? They have some compacted areas which they know need additional insulation. And there's also some return insulated ductwork in the attic. Should these be covered with more insulation?
Well, that's a real good question. I tend to tell people to do very little to their house. Now, Sean may want to go up in the attic and just fluff up the insulation if it's been compacted down by foot traffic, but I would leave it. I have a lot of houses in Madison where I tell people, let's take all the insulation out of the attic and let's air seal it. So let's say that Sean's house air leaks horribly. Then what we're going to do, we're going to have more insulation to take out or to battle our way through. Or let's say he's got the new owners are going to have a major rewiring project with all kinds of recessed lights and things put in the floor or the ceiling below the attic. Well, again, I think I would simply not put in the money. The home inspector is going to look at it if they're using the national standards as published by the American Society of Home Inspectors, and all that's available online, by the way. And they're going to describe the insulation, but us having a low amount of insulation is not considered to be a defect, at least here in Wisconsin. So I think I would tell Sean to save his money, maybe just fluff up what's there and leave it at that.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for that email. And let's go back to the phones. Tim in Waukesha has a question. Hi, Tim.
Hi, yes.
What's your question?
My question was about air conditioning. I'm getting quotes for an air conditioner, and I'm wondering whether I should go with a single stage 16 SEER air conditioner or a variable speed 19 SEER air conditioner.
What do you think, John?
Well, there's a fairly significant difference between energy use. One of the things, Tim, I don't know if your local utility participates and focus on energy.
I don't know.
Yeah, you should be able to go to Focus on Energy website, and if your local utility, and most of the larger ones do, it's usually the small and the municipal-owned utilities and the cooperatives that don't participate, but the larger ones, you know, like Alliant, MG&E, et cetera, do. So take a look at the difference between the rebates that you can get. So that may help you decide as well, but obviously the more energy we can save with a multi-stage, a SEER 19 is a very, very nice system, though a SEER 16 is certainly not shabby. But perhaps we can see if the difference of the rebate is $200 versus $500, maybe that'll help make the decision.
Okay. Thanks for that call.
I think, Jill, probably Larry and I mentioned Focus on Energy every single
program. Yeah, we always do.
So let's just mention it again. Mm-hmm. For people who live in areas where their utility does participate in the rebate program, let's make sure that as we upgrade our houses, that we get the rebates. And on some of them, I would have to go online to see exactly what they have now, and it changes a lot. But I believe if you can cut like the energy use in your house by 30-some%, you're looking at rebates in the thousands of dollars. And if you're lower income, a lot of those rebates are doubled. So do a little bit of research as you're upgrading your house and see if there is some public money or utility money, I guess, in this case, that is out there to help you.
Okay. And there's also, I know there's a spot on there where you can get some free stuff like light bulbs and stuff. So
that is correct.
Yeah.
There's also lists of, what are they called, alliances, contractor alliances or something or other.
Yeah.
But if you want to have an energy inspection done on your house, you're going to find a list of people in your area there. So Focus on Energy, very useful. And even if your utility doesn't participate, you can still use it for finding things like an energy inspector who is in your area.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks for the call there, Tim. Let's go on to Mike in Nina. Hi, Mike. What's your question?
Hello.
What's your question, Mike?
I had a roof replaced about 5 years ago, and then I had a contractor give me an estimate for insulating the ceiling, and he tells me the venting is totally inadequate, and he wants to add venting. I'm wondering how I determine the reality here, if this needs to be done. And he also had an outrageous price for insulating the ceiling. So I'm wondering what to believe.
Well, venting is extremely important, and venting is actually required by the Uniform Dwelling Code. So they don't enforce it if you've got an older house, Mike. The venting police are not going to come and ticket you. But we do have standards for venting, and venting is of two types: air that goes out and air that comes in. And if we don't have them both, it's useless. In fact, it can be worse than useless. most houses now will have either continuous ridge venting along the high point of the roof, or they'll have what we call pot or turtle vents. So it's these plastic or metal, looks like little square boxes, and they've got a round vent inside to let air out. Some houses also have gable vents, and those were pretty popular in some styles of houses in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and on into the 50s. So what we have to take a look at is how much high venting do we have, and is that getting the air out of the house? And the rule of thumb is that you want a net square foot of opening high up for every 300 feet of house. So if you've got a 1,500 square foot house, you want 5 feet of net square opening. Now, one of those turtle vents is 0.8 per foot. So if you have either six or seven of those turtle vents, then you've got plenty of high opening. Or the ridge vent varies. All the manufacturers will tell you there's so much net square inch per lineal foot. What's really important, and what we don't find in a lot of houses, is places for air to come in low. Some houses have what looks like metal soffit venting, except they've got an old plywood soffit above it with no holes in it. So sometimes you have to do a little bit of research. And we may have soffit vents, but if the space between the rafters or the trusses is completely blocked, the air can't get into the attic. So we really need to do a little bit of thinking about how we get venting in the house. Now, there certainly are a lot of things online. You can Google how does attic venting work, and you'll get a lot of nice pictures, and you can sort of try to think that through. The other thing that you can do is you can go to the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors, WAHI, website, and you can look for home inspectors or energy inspectors in the Neenah area who can come over and help you figure out what exactly you've got up there for low venting, high venting, et cetera, get the measurements and figure it all out. So the venting is important. I don't know exactly what they're looking at Mike's house for the spray foam insulation. Spray foam can be fairly expensive. Certainly, if you're not happy with the price, I usually suggest talking to two or three contractors. There's always one that knows more than the other, and he's not the cheapest, or she's not the cheapest. But getting multiple opinions is good. And if you do start with a home inspector or energy inspector, that person may give you a design that you can then bid out with two or three different contractors.
Okay, thank you so much for that call, Mike. Let's go to Fran in Saukville next. Hi, Fran. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Hey, I wanted to ask about what reasons we should be looking at as far as not getting enough heat in the winter to our upper level and not getting enough coolant in the summer on the upper level. I have spoken with HVAC people, and I've gotten everything from we need new ductwork to you need returns put in the bedrooms to, the size of the ductwork is considerably smaller than the ductwork for the lower level. And I'm beginning to wonder, too, if insulation has something to do with it, because I just feel no airflow on that upper level. And when we did electrical work, we found like almost 3 to 4 feet of insulation between the attic floor and the kitchen ceiling. And yet there's also insulation on the roof of the attic as well. And I'm just wondering if maybe things are just too tight on that upper level. I just would like us to not go through another winter having to worry about my son being warm enough up there.
Right, right. Well, okay, so we can look at two things. First, if it's cold in the winter, one could be because of excessive heat loss. So we need to look at that. It could be that if we reduce the heat loss, which in many cases is reducing the air leakage from the second floor, that suddenly our heat is adequate. So I think taking a look at that may be a place to start. How old is your house, Fran?
It was built in 1954.
Okay, 1954, yeah. So that's pretty much still the dark ages. There's not a lot of difference between 1954 and 1909. So you may want to start with an energy inspection. You may want to go to Focus on Energy, find somebody in the Saukville area, and it's going to cost you $400 to $500. What they're going to do two things. They're going to do a blower door test, so we'll find out how leaky your house is. And that'll give you information not just on the second floor, but on the first floor, the ring joists, et cetera. The second thing that they will do is thermal imaging. Now, this is not a great time of year to do thermal imaging. The colder it is outside, the better for thermal imaging. But some of the men and women who do it are, you know, can do it in the summer. But let's start with a little bit of science. The second bit of science we use is I have a little meter that I carry. I turn on the furnace fan, and I can go to every register in the house. It tells me exactly how many cubic feet per minute are coming through it. And this is what your HVAC people should do. This is like a, you know, $40 or $50 little gadget, just battery powered. But it gives you an idea of how much air is actually. You can go around the house, make a quick sketch on a piece of grid paper, and figure out how much air is coming through every single duct in the house. You can also go to the returns and see what's going into the returns. 1954, the return system may be quite weak, but we talked a little bit earlier about the problem, especially with cooling, of getting high returns in. That is something you may have to take a look at. We talked about possibly taking out redundant chimneys, having to go through some stacked closets to get returns up, and other things. But let's start with a little bit of science, perhaps an energy inspection first, and then we certainly want to talk to a heating guy that has a meter that can tell you how many CFM is moving through each of them. Fran, how old is your furnace?
I believe the furnace is about 15 years old. It's a Bryant.
A Bryant, and is it side vented through a piece of plastic pipe, or is it going into a chimney?
I believe it's going into a chimney, yeah.
Okay, so you've got an older Bryant, probably 58 series or something. You will find that when you replace that furnace, which is near the end of its life, that you can specify a much better furnace fan. The condensing furnaces have stronger fans because they need it, because the condensing furnace combustion chamber and heat exchanger is so complicated, and they're built upside down. The fire comes in at the top, and then the ID fan pulls the combustion product downward. Of course, they want to go upward so that they move slowly. So you may find that you don't have to do a whole lot of expensive ductwork. Maybe we need a furnace with a little bit better, more powerful fan. And certainly Bryant Carrier is a good brand to look at, as you know, as is Lennox, Armstrong, and several others. Lennox, I believe, offers five different powers of fan in most furnaces. So let's start with the energy inspection and see what you learn there. Then let's do a little bit of testing and see what we've got for flow around the ducts. If we've got a couple of ducts with no flow, we've got a problem. But if we've got some with 100 CFM, but downstairs it's 400, can we damper the ones downstairs? One thing to look at in your basement, Fran, is you may have dampers on the ductwork. They're going to look like just little handles. Usually they have a little butterfly screw to loosen it, and you may be able to dampen down the upstairs. And this is called balancing. And again, any HVAC guy that has a meter should be able to balance your system. He can send more air upstairs and less air downstairs, assuming you've got those dampers, and 99% of the houses have them. So for some reason, I don't think you've gotten to talk to the smartest HVAC guy in town yet. So you may have to make a couple more calls.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Fran. Let's take another email. Cindy emailed us that their house was built in 1937. It has the original wooden storms and screens that need to be replaced, but they like the original inside windows and the ropes still work. Could they just have new storms and screens made?
Certainly. And if you want, you can get wooden combination windows.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of companies make them. A lot of them are too cheap. They're made out of what's called finger-jointed wood. Don't buy those. What you want to look is ones that are made of solid wood. I'm pretty sure that Marvin makes them. The nice thing about the wood combinations is you have the same look, but you don't have to take these windows off and put the screens up and all of that sort of stuff. And the price on it is not particularly onerous compared to good quality metal windows. So I would go that direction. Your existing windows, yes, indeed, do keep them. Make sure they're weather stripped. If they aren't weather stripped, you can weather strip them yourself with like a sprung brass. And there is absolutely nothing wrong. Jill, an old window that doesn't leak a lot of air, it's got decent weather stripping and a decent combination window, is as good as a brand new vinyl window with a half inch thermal pane.
Wow. Why is that? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me, but why?
Dead air space.
Ah.
Because we've got a dead air space, and it's not completely dead, because we don't want storm windows to be absolutely dead tight, especially wooden ones.
Right.
We want a little bit of air movement. But between the thermal resistance of the two layers of glass and the dead air space, it basically equals a cheap new vinyl sealed unit.
Okay. Let's go to Virginia, and Virginia is in Fitchburg. Hi, what can we help you with?
Hi. Oh, I'm going to turn off my radio. Hold on.
Okay, we'll just fill some air here for you, Virginia. Are you back?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay,
can
go
you
ahead.
Hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
I have some stamped concrete, quite a lot of it on the front porch and steps and a landing pad, made by Bowmanite, probably 20 years old. It's lost its luster now.
Hello, Virginia? Oh, I think we lost her. She was wondering how to seal and restore it, John.
What is she? I'm sorry, I didn't even get what she was sealing and restoring.
She has stamped concrete on, I think she said, her steps and her landing pad. And she was wondering,
okay.
Yeah, it's 20-some years old.
Okay. Yeah, so it probably has lost its color and maybe it's spalling. I think she's in Fitchburg, so she's going to have to talk to a local contractor who does that. I believe there's one in Oregon. There's two more in Madison. You can restain it if it's lost its color, and then you can also seal it. For sealants in the Madison area, I would go to County Concrete on Nesbitt Road, take a picture of what you want to seal, and talk to the gentleman at the desk at County Concrete, because they are really helpful, and they're going to recommend Meadows Volcomp 20 or something else. But the Madison area has just a plethora of good contractors and also dealers like County Concrete, who should be able to give her really good advice.
Okay, great.
And she's in Fitchburg. She's probably only a few miles from County Concrete.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Virginia. And let's take one more email before we have to say goodbye to you, John. Matt
okay.
emailed. They have a two-story house that they removed a bunch of ivy vines from, and now they want to clean up the aluminum siding that has the vine little foot thingies left over. What's the best way to clean the little footy things off?
Oh, dear. Not going to like the answer. Lots and lots and lots of elbow grease, and
oh.
then you're going to be repainting.
Oh.
Those things, I know of no way of dissolving them. I mean, super glue is great stuff. The little ivy stickers are stronger.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm sure that's pretty bad news for Matt, but, you know, it's a project, right? It's a project.
Yeah, hate to stop with a downer, but that's where we are.
Is ivy very, is it bad for the building? I mean, is that something you should take off, or should you just leave it there?
Not over metal siding.
Okay.
It obviously is going to hold some moisture.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of problems now on the north side of buildings. I would avoid on the north side of buildings. You certainly do not want ivy on wood siding or on brick or on stone. But metal siding is pretty forgiving. We have to remember that metal siding, like vinyl siding, is a rain screen. So there's air moving in back of it, even if it's covered with ivy. It isn't the greatest thing in the world, but, you know, some houses look better with ivy.
I was going to say, they're pretty sometimes. So. Thank you so much, John. Good to hear from you again. Take care.
It's been a great pleasure. Stay well.
You too. We've been talking with John Freiberger. He'll be back to help you with your home improvement questions on October 8th. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Neil DeBoll will be back to help you out with your prairie garden that starts at 11. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening.